Welcome to the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. I'm your host, Carrie Barber. Kristen L. Berry's debut novel is called We Don't Talk About Carol. It's a mystery in which a contemporary young woman, Sydney Singleton, discovers that her father had a sister she never knew about. As Sydney, a former journalist, begins to look into it, she discovers her Aunt Carol was one of six black girls to go missing from a North Carolina neighborhood in the 1960s. It's a twisty mystery that you won't want to put down. Kristen L. Berry, welcome to the Gulf Coast Life Book Club.
Thank you so much for having me, Carrie. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, it's so great to talk to you about this book. One of the first things, I'm just going to dig right in here. I have so many questions. One of the first things Sydney discovers is that her family never filed a missing persons report for Carol, which for me as a reader, that was a little bit surprising to hear, like how often that is the case. Like it's more common than I would have thought. Can you talk a little bit about that, like why a family might make that choice?
Sure. I think there could be lots of different reasons. I think that if you, you know, for example, come from a community that might have mistrust of law enforcement or not believe that law enforcement will take your claims seriously, I think there can be some reticence to contacting the police for that reason. I think there are also lots of misconceptions about the length of time that one might need to wait before making a missing persons report, filing a missing persons report. And then I think there are also cases, as in the case of this book, where maybe the person who goes missing is someone who has talked about, you know, running away for quite some time. And so then maybe it's easier to even think that perhaps your loved one ran away on their own versus something nefarious happening to them. So I think there's so many complicated reasons why a family might not file a missing persons report for a loved one.
And in addition to that, this is a family that, I mean, the title is We Don't Talk About Carol. This is a family that is pretty taciturn about a lot of things. They're not the type to like air their troubles to the world.
Yes.
And for instance, Sydney's father was very hurt by his sister disappearing, but he never talked about that. Sydney and her sister had trauma from their father, and they don't really talk about that either. Do you feel like this is all on a continuum for this family?
Absolutely. So Sydney's, my main character, Sydney, she grows up in a household with the family mantra of what happens in this house stays in this house. And I think it's a mantra that a lot of us may have grown up with ourselves. I know I did for very different reasons. And it's a mentality that is designed to sort of protect a family's reputation. And I think you can understand why a family might develop such a mantra, especially if they're, you know, coming from a time and a place where maybe their good name is the only form of social capital they really have.
Yeah.
So you can understand the desire to protect that. But I think the challenge with that mentality is often that people in those households often don't even talk about difficult things amongst each other either. There's sort of a habit of sweeping difficult things under the rug, not discussing traumatic events internally or externally. I think it can make it very difficult then to seek help if you need it or process things through speaking about them, which I think a lot of us do. And so, yes, I think that unfortunately that mindset of what happens in this house stays in this house has been passed down through generations of this family and continues to be a problem in Sydney's time as well.
And also, like you said, if the greater system outside their door has not been helpful to them or perhaps has been hurtful to them, why would they? You know, why, you can understand why they wouldn't want to bring in a hurtful authority figure. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's all, unfortunately, a pretty vicious cycle.
Yes. I know that, you know, a missing white girl gets every media outlet in the country on it. And then so many black and indigenous girls and women go missing without being investigated, which is something that is woven through your book. Can you talk a little bit more about that and kind of how that influenced your story?
Yeah, absolutely. I was inspired to write the story while taking one of my many socially distanced pandemic walks listening to true crime podcasts. And it was in listening to those podcasts that I learned about the really disturbing discrepancies when it comes to the way missing people of color, the way their cases are treated in the US. Black Americans, for example, we are disproportionately reported missing when it comes to our share of the population, but our cases are far less likely to be covered statistically by the press, and they're also less like we're also less likely to be found. And thinking about the statistics, you know, I was imagining the people in my life. You know, I'm a Black woman. I was thinking about my niece, my nephews. You know, as this could happen to them. They could face this sort of situation. And so I was inspired to try to shed light on this issue, but to do so through a propulsive yet, you know, really emotional story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are things getting any better? I wonder now that everyone is listening to true crime podcasts and TV shows, it would appear, do you think things are getting any better, or is that not really having an effect? It's just sort of for entertainment, which is another very disturbing thing.
You know, I think anecdotally speaking anyway, I think that there is at least more attention being paid to these disparities. And I think that there are also some really important organizations that are helping to shed light on this issue. For example, the Black and Missing Foundation does a lot of incredible work to try to help provide additional resources and just to get the word out about cases that are not getting the attention they need. I think also, you know, people are turning to social media also to try to get additional awareness for the cases of missing people of color. So I do think that people are at least becoming more aware of this issue. I think that unfortunately, like with many things, with many systemic issues, it's going to take quite a lot of time to completely change the situation. You know, when I was looking at the FBI statistics, even from, I think, 2023 at the time was the last available data, there was still a glaring disparity in terms of the number of missing people of color reported missing in the country. You know, when you think about our share of the population. So the numbers still show that the problem exists. Mm-hmm. But I do think that we as a society are becoming more aware of this issue and are hopeful that we can make a change here.
Yes. And I know you referred to that foundation in the book, and I can link to that on the webpage too for this. So if people want to find out more, they can go to the Black and Missing Foundation. And just that it makes sense that the more you can get the word out, the more luck you could have or the more success you could have. So it makes sense that social media, now that we've sort of removed the gatekeepers and anybody can kind of spread the word, that makes sense. And also, I loved how in your book, you really wove in the role of the media into the investigation of these girls and sort of what a difference that can make, whether the media is paying attention or willing to broadcast something or not. So can you say a little bit about that, why you wanted to involve that in your plot?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there is definitely a correlation between the fact that the cases of missing people of color are less likely to be covered by the press and are also less likely to be solved. I think that when there is strong media attention for the story, for the case of a missing person, that can create additional pressure on law enforcement to put additional resources behind finding that individual. It can also make the community more aware, more alert, to keep an eye out for, you know, either the missing person themselves or for anyone related to their case. So I think that creating that public awareness is such a crucial aspect of finding a missing person. And without that, it can be extremely difficult to do so.
Yes. And it might just make the difference between somebody saying like, oh, I'm just going to leave that person alone, or wait a second, I think I saw that guy's picture on the news, you know. So it's a good thing to spread the word. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking with Kristen L. Berry about her debut novel, We Don't Talk About Carol, on the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. Sydney is a former journalist, and she had some mental health repercussions as a journalist, which is a topic I'm familiar with as a journalist. Can you say more about that? That's another thing that sort of came up, that sort of gained an awareness during the pandemic and the years after.
Absolutely. I mean, I was interested in exploring this topic in part because I think one of the other difficult aspects of growing up in a house that tends to bury painful topics under the rug is that it can also be difficult to reach out for help in processing those. A, just to acknowledge that you might be struggling with something in the first place, and then B, to reach out to someone to help work through those issues. And so I thought that especially for someone who has repressed so many difficult things for so long, that can obviously take a significant toll on someone's mental health. And so it made sense for me that Sydney would need to work through that in the story. And one of the key themes for the book is that I wanted to explore the fact that in order to really embrace our future, we first have to be willing to reconcile with our past. And so I thought it was really important for Sydney to do that with the help of professionals as well, who could help her process and move forward from some of the things she experienced in her past.
Yes, that's interesting. So as a person, as a community, as a country, that theme is very wide ranging. And just, I don't want to give too much away of the plot, but she has to sort of deal with something in her past before she can. It's something that sort of reminds her of this case of her Aunt Carol, and it's very interesting how it all sort of gets woven together.
I think that idea of sort of, you know, I was interested in exploring the breaking of sort of generational curses, hopefully being the person to break a cycle within your family. And so, yeah, that was, again, without giving anything away, I think that was something that I really wanted to explore in the story.
Yeah. A lot of the book is set around Raleigh, North Carolina, and a lot of the action takes place at Shaw University, which I really felt like you brought that area to life. Have you lived there, or did you do a lot of research, or how did you get that to be so realistic?
Yeah, thank you so much. No, I never actually lived in Raleigh myself, but my mom is from Raleigh, and her family lived there for quite a while. My uncle still lives in Raleigh. So I spent quite a lot of time talking to both my mom and my uncle about their experiences growing up in Raleigh. And then I also did a research trip as I was revising the novel to just make sure I got a good feel for the area and was able to try to capture it as clearly as possible in the pages.
Yeah. You did a really nice job. Did you base this plot on any real story or many real stories, or was there like one case that really caught your eye, or how did you get to this particular plot?
So no, this wasn't based on any sort of real story from history, though I'm sure, unfortunately, it might be reminiscent of many cases of missing people and missing people of color in particular. Where the mystery really came from was when I knew that I wanted to write a story that really humanized the idea of missing people of color being treated differently in the U.S. I wanted to root it in a single case that was really personal to Sydney's family, but to have it have kind of broader ramifications for the community, given the fact that there were several girls who went missing from the Raleigh area from around the same time.
Mm. And did you research like similar cases, or how did you get into kind of all the nuts and bolts of the police and, you know, the investigation and all that stuff?
So I think because I'd listened to true crime podcasts for so long, I think so much of it was just sort of embedded in me. But I did do a bit of research in terms of how missing people were treated back in the 1960s when these girls started to go missing, in part because this was before ideas like stranger danger became common in our parlance. And I think that there were probably even more cases of people, of missing people, classified as runaways, perhaps even more than now. I mean, I could be wrong mm-hmm. about that, but it did seem like that was a frequent case, especially when it came to missing people of color. Young people in particular were often categorized and miscategorized as being runaways. And so I did want to incorporate that plot line within the story as well. I mean, that still happens. I think mm-hmm. that unfortunately a lot of cases of missing young people are misclassified as being runaways. So that was something that I wanted to weave in into the story as well.
Yes, very interesting. And I love a good thriller, especially in the summer.
So, me too.
I don't know why summer, but it just, I don't know, I just get a little craving for them. But often thrillers are like all plot and very little character development. And yes. I loved that you really showed Sydney in particular, her growth through her marriage. I don't know. I just love that there was character development in this, like, not only is it a thriller, but there's also character development. And can you talk a little bit about that? Was that, I mean, it's like, it's a thriller, but it's literary fiction. It's kind of cool that you were able to wrap it all up like that.
Oh, thank you. I mean, so suspense and thriller, those are like my favorite genres, but my next favorite is family drama. And so I was really interested in seeing if I could find a way to weave those both in into one story. And I think the other piece for me is that I get really frustrated actually when I read suspense stories where a protagonist is somehow able to shirk all the responsibilities of adult life in order to chase a mystery. And so I tend to prefer stories where the protagonist has sort of a rich, full life and trying to maintain that life while also chasing down a mystery is part of the suspense of the story.
Yes.
Seeing if they can kind of carry all those pieces at once. And so I definitely wanted to incorporate that as well. And for me too, I also appreciate a really good character arc and seeing some strong growth within a character in a story. And so for me, it was just important to try to bring that into this novel while also maintaining a propulsive plot.
Right. Yes. I just flashed back on, there's some scenes where Sydney is sort of like crouched in a corner at work so nobody can see her screen while she's doing a little research on the case. And I just could relate so hard to that. Like when you're at work, but you're trying to like sneak in something, yes. some personal work. Yeah. I love that. So this is your first novel, as I said at the beginning. Was this always what you wanted to write about? Or like, how did this come to you and you were like, this is what's going to be it for my first novel?
So, yeah, I've wanted to be a published author my entire life since before I clearly remember. And this is my first published novel, though I did write an entire novel right after I graduated from college. We'll call it my practice novel.
Yeah.
No one should ever read it. But I learned a lot in the process, yes. including the fact that I could complete something of this length.
Yes.
And so I was actually writing after I shelved that, I was writing a lot of short stories, not even with the intention of publishing them really, but mostly just to practice my craft and get better at storytelling. And it was actually during the early days of the pandemic when I think a lot of us were reevaluating numerous aspects of our lives that I thought, okay, if you're going to write this novel, now is a better time than any to get started. And so I really just started thinking about, okay, what would be the novel that I would want to pick up from my local independent bookstore? What would speak to me? And so that sort of got the wheels turning when it came to this story. And as soon as I thought of this character, Sydney, and the thought of discovering, you know, a photo of a young woman who looks more like you than even your own mother or sister, but has never been mentioned by your family before, I couldn't let it go. I knew I needed to try to find a way to tell this story and to do it justice.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Well, you did. Unfortunately, we are getting to the end of our time here, but is there anything else that you would like to discuss about the book? Is there anything else that you want readers to know?
Sure. I mean, I think something that I find myself telling people regularly is this book does deal with some pretty heavy topics, but the feeling that I want people to walk away from most is one of hope.
Yeah.
And that I think that, you know, it can be very daunting and frightening to look back at our pasts and maybe, you know, face some of the darker aspects of it head on. But if we want to, you know, move forward with the lives we want to build in the future, that's such an important part of that process. So I do want people to know that, you know, yes, this can be challenging, can be a challenging read at times, but I hope that, you know, you walk away with that more optimistic feeling.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It is a hopeful book. I mean, it's I definitely have a hopeful feeling when I, you know, had a hopeful feeling when I finished it. So that's a very good point. If you're turning away from it because you think it's too grim, it's really not. I mean, and also as time goes by, as you said, it's a very slow process, but things are slightly improving.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah.
I'm feeling hopeful.
Yes.
You can say that.
Yes. Yes. All right. Great. That was Kristen L. Berry, the author of We Don't Talk About Carol. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us on the Gulf Coast Life Book Club.
Thanks so much for having me, Carrie. This was a real pleasure.
That was Kristen L. Berry, the author of We Don't Talk About Carol. Buy the book from Macintosh Books through bookshop.org or order it from Books and Books in Miami. We will have links at wgcu.org. I'm your host, Carrie Barber. We have production help today from Mike Kanairi. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.